Welcome to the Dork Forest. Jackie and her pals will never bore us. Shameless confessions
about our obsessions
will make us laugh and smile. So let's explore the Dork Forest and dork out for a while.
Hey Rangers, it's me, Jackie Cation, and it is another year of the Dork Forest. What the heck, right? So you should know that the website, JackieCation.com or thedorkforest.com or dorkforest.com, if you don't enjoy a determiner, are all still available. You could hear the show on all of the different things. I've been trying to figure out how to get off Spotify. Try not to listen to Spotify because they throw in ads that are not approved by me, Jackie Cation. So, we'll see what I could do. Anyway, but so you could always watch the show on my YouTube channel. I think it's The Dork Forest or Jackie Cation. It's all linkable on JackieCation.com, the Dork Forest page. And I have another podcast called The Jackie and Laurie Show. Not quite as sleepable because it's just me and Laurie Kilmartin bitching about stand-up comedy and also celebrating it. Anyway, so here's the thing. You can donate again to the show. If you enjoy the show, I would love for you to donate about $100 a year because that keeps everything in rolling along. And you can do PayPal, which is my email, jackie@jackiecation.com, which you can also email me anything you like about the shows and stuff like that. You can Venmo me at Jackie Cation. That's my Venmo handle. And if you see me in real life at a comedy show, you could just hand me a sweaty wad of 20s or whatever you like. That'd be great. And I also do stand-up comedy. So you can see my tour dates on JackieCation.com. You can see, you can listen to very old episodes of The Dork Forest on my Bandcamp. And I also put my very first album that I ripped. It's on my Bandcamp page. It's called It's not Circus People. It's Cake Is Not My Downfall, which is a track on the Bread album, but it has other jokes that are not on the Bread album. The audio is what it is, but there's also some very early Dork Forests and a storytelling album called Storytime, all on Bandcamp, and everything's either free or a couple of bucks. So new album coming out in February called Altercation and new special. And that, I'm sure there's more to it, but let's get into the show.
Awesome.
And hey, welcome to the Dork Forest. Guess what? We're recording right now.
It's happening
right now. And I'm going to say your name right one time, but it's going to be Abigail Shimon.
You nailed it.
Thank you very much. I could go into telemarketing tomorrow. That's right. You
professional comedian. You know how to say a person's name.
Welcome, Rangers. It's going to be exciting. It's a crafty one. I haven't done a lot of craft. That's not true. It was 1,000 episodes, and I have done some craft episodes. But Abigail Shimon, there we go, is a comic, lives in London, England, and has a new comedy special out, by the way, called Legally Cheeky, and it's on her YouTube channel, much like mine's going to be in a week. When this drops, it'll be out tomorrow, so don't forget to check mine out. But if you go to abigailia.com, all the links will be there, and Abigailia is spelled A-B-I-G-O-L-I-A-H, and it'll be in the notes, and you have two podcasts yourself. One is called Neurodivergent Moments Podcast, and the other one is called All British Comedy Explained Podcast, and that makes me laugh, and that's funny.
So Neurodivergent Moments is a podcast I do with my buddy Joe Wells. He's autistic. I'm ADHD, and we talk to other neurodivergent people, and we also
have
a book.
Do you have to be diagnosed?
You don't have to be diagnosed, but you have to identify as.
Yes, self-diagnosed. I love it.
Oh yeah. Do you self-diagnose or professional diagnose?
Not yet. Any minute now. Other people have chosen to diagnose me. So and I'm like, I don't care. I've learned how to process my life without the diagnosis. So, but I'll take it. My husband, Andy Ashcraft, did try to get, he thought he had ADHD. And it was, they said no. They said that he was just vaguely procrastinating. And
okay.
And he was like, well, that is one of the most disappointing diagnoses I've ever had in my life. And I was like, it's fine. You get to not, I mean, there's too many things to do. It's not your fault. You get to say, hey, I can't write a book, make three games, teach game design, have a relationship, and love my friends and family all at once. It's fine. You're just overwhelmed.
Well, if it makes Andy feel any better, whenever now, because I have a podcast about it, now people get in touch with me like I'm a freaking medical professional.
Right.
And they're always like, the meds, do the meds help? And I'm like, the meds help, but you're still the same person. So like, as much as everyone's like, if I get the meds, I won't procrastinate. And I'm like, you will. You'll just be very focused on what you're doing to procrastinate. But you'll still procrastinate.
Oh, that is devastating. That is devastating for someone who just wanted to take some Adderall and get some shit done. Yeah. Well, my condolences. Thoughts and prayers, folks. The other one, British comedy. Do you talk about the new up-and-comings? Or do you talk about the old-timies? What do you talk about, British comedy?
We talk about the old timies, but if I can go back to neurodivergent moments real quick.
Sure.
Because no one listens to the plugs at the end of podcasts. Joe and I have a book coming out in June that's like a series of essays. Think David Sedaris, but it's all around neurodivergency. And if you've read David Sedaris, it's just that vibe. Because, God, I've never read anyone more, maybe not undiagnosed. But... But it's out in June. It's available for pre-order now. It's available both in the UK and the States. So check it out at your local bookshop or online. But
and is it listed on abugalaya.com?
Yes, it should be. If it's not, it will be by the time this comes out.
This comes out. There we go.
I will get on that. And then All British Comedy Explained, I do with my friend Tom Selinsky, who is a real comedy nerd. And I have seen, despite living in London for 11 years, shockingly very little British television. Like, I've seen a lot of stand-up.
Okay.
But not the TV shows.
So British comedy is British comedy. It's not stand-up. Okay. Yeah. I see.
So we're talking sketch shows, Monty Python's Flying Circus. We did some radio, The Goon Show. And so he tells me the history. So it's like an educational podcast. Then we watch it. We get my reactions. We just
raw,
had one
unfiltered reactions. There it is.
Yeah. And sometimes when we can, we try to get someone involved with a show to come and talk to us afterwards. And for this coming season, we did a show called The Fall and Rise of Reginald Perrin, which came out in 1979, and everyone involved with it is dead. So
yeah.
I think your listeners will appreciate it. It won't be out by the time this comes out, but you should just subscribe to the podcast anyways, because it's coming. Yeah. We got a fan of Reginald Perrin and fan of All British Comedy Explained to come on, David Tennant.
Oh, wow.
Apparently, he listens to our podcast, and he was like, I'd love to do one. And we were like, we usually only do people involved with the show, but we'll make an exception for you.
Yeah, attainable goal, first of all, in general. And then David Tennant is introduced into the plot. So, I am going to make sure that my computer is charging. I'm in Denver.
How's the Mile High City?
The Mile High City is thin on oxygen, and there we go. Nope, so close to actually charging my laptop. There we go. And behind me is an homage to
that's stunning
endangered species. She has up, the owner of this club is Wendy, is amazing. She designed, this is the only condo in stand-up comedy that I stay in, because she gets it cleaned at a hotel level, which isn't always perfect, but it is almost always perfect, and you can complain. So, but this, the behind me, there is a bunch, there's a, like a New York Times article about rare rhinos killing a poacher. So she's a bit of an animal rights activist, and so she will let people know. There's also a bunch of just kind of pop art around the place, and there's a video, like a tabletop video game where you could play all the tabletop video. I don't ever plug it. I plug it in if I don't want to get anything done. And yeah. It turns out, so I try not to plug it in when I play the Comedy Works Denver. This week, I'm off to the Chicago Den with Maria Bamford, and then I'm in my hometown, South Milwaukee. Guess what? This has turned into plugging Jackie's road dates. We will eventually.
I love it.
I'm South Milwaukee, and then I'm in Vermont, and then I'm in Boston. And so I'm on the road hardcore coming up, so everybody should go to JackieCation.com and find out where I'm doing stand-up comedy. Because remember, the Dork Forest is a delight, but I also do, that's what I do for a living. Dork Forest is not. It's not your fault, listeners. It's not your fault. It could be if you're rich. It could be your fault, but it's not. I blame you not. I psyched you as a yeah.
The special you have coming out, is it the stuff you were working on when I saw you in London last
Murray?
Summer?
Yeah. Yeah. It's almost the, okay. It's almost entirely that, except for there's a new 10 minutes on the front end. And of course, after I recorded it, I wrote 3 new punches. For that are not on the album.
And, we are never finished.
Nope, never finished. So feel free to come and see it live, and you will go, it is slightly different live. You're like, that's right. As opposed to what I assume is happening in music, where they just play a studio. But I'm probably wrong. They probably play it slightly different music live as well. Do you know?
I don't. I mean, who knows anymore? Back in the day, they would. But now with everything set to a track, and it's basically, especially with pop, where you go see someone live and it's a Las Vegas style show, I don't think there's a lot of room to slow things down. You know, I think the track is set.
Maybe not. Yeah.
Yeah. But listeners, I did see a version of this comedy special, and let me say, it is wonderful. It is perfect.
Thank you very much.
You will laugh very hard. Go to it. Jackie Cation's YouTube, check it out.
And see Altercation. You knock yourself out. It's out for 2 weeks, I think, or 3 weeks only on Sirius. But the video's out starting tomorrow. And then there's a month when Sirius gets to just play it all by itself. And then hopefully I make a lot of residuals off of that. And then it's everywhere you'd ever want. But no hard copies, much to my father's chagrin, because he has a CD player. And I will have to burn it to CD so that he could go, it's all right. That's I'm really looking forward to that. Or he says nothing. So anyway, you embroider. It's embroidery dorkdom.
I do. See, where so many people have dorkdoms that I think are cool, right? Like, I think comic books are cool. I think video games are cool. And I never got into that. But at one point, a couple years ago, I was trying to find a hobby that I would not turn into a side hustle. Because I've done that with everything else.
like what?
Like, I really got into yoga in college. And once I graduated, I immediately became a yoga instructor. Like everyone in the world, I got into cooking and baking over lockdown. So I tried to turn it into a YouTube show that was short-lived and very time-consuming. But it was fun while it lasted. But then I didn't want to cook anymore because then I was cooking for, like, comedy. And I'm like, I just need a fucking hobby. And so I went on the internet and got myself a little embroidery kit. That's how I suggest anyone start. You can get them on Etsy. You can get them on Amazon. I know Amazon's the devil, but they are there. Find one you like. You get it. It comes with the needles and the hoop and the pattern. It'll come with directions like on this one, you do a leaf stitch, and then you go to your phone and you go to either Instagram or TikTok and go leaf stitch embroidery and watch a 30-second video on how to do it and go, yep, got it. And that's how I started.
Wow, that's the new way to learn how to do it, as opposed to, did the directions tell you how to do a leaf stitch, but it was easier to watch?
They are, but the directions aren't that good on the little paper. Like, it sort of will be like, this is what it is, but it's not super clear. Now that I'm a full-on embroidery nerd, I've even taken a class at the Royal School of Needlework. Did you know that was a thing?
I would have guessed, but congratulations for taking the class.
Well, I didn't do the certificate. There's a certificate.
Yeah. Well, how will you prove it? Oh, look at you.
Yes.
Royal Society of Needlework. 200.
Royal School of Needlework.
Oh, it does say
society there. You're right. I'm wrong. I'm reading it backwards.
But it does say school, though. It says both.
It does. Yes. So they have a book called 200... Essential Embroidery Stitches, which I bought. It's basically, well, I bought it. My mother bought it for me for Christmas because it is essentially a textbook. So it costs way more than it needs to.
Right.
These are some good directions.
Oh, they are. With graphics and photos.
Yeah.
But I bet you if you do go to Instagram or YouTube, you are like, oh, I see what's happening. And you could double check on that in that book.
Sometimes it's just easier, I think, when something is like a physical doing, to watch a physical doing of it. Going back to like baking or cooking, if someone's like folding the eggs, it's like, can I see a video of what folding the eggs means?
Right. Yeah. Or yoga. It's just like, yeah. I need to see what that position looks like.
Exactly.
Yes. Well done.
But I fell in love with it. If you get like the little embroidery kits, it's basically, I call it coloring in slow motion. And it is my video games, like where people are like, I got a new game and I played it for like 6 hours straight. Like, that's me with embroidery. I won't eat. I won't drink. I'm like, I can't get up.
Get dehydrated.
I love it so much.
Yes. You should have a little water right next to you. Just ready take a sip.
Yeah. I try to, but I get so excited when I'm doing the French knot. How can we pause, you know?
So here's what I know about embroidery. There's a round sort of frame.
Mm-hmm.
It's called a hoop. It's called a hoop. You put a cloth, a piece of something, in that mm-hmm. frame so that it holds it taut.
Yes.
You have embroidery thread, which is different colors.
Yes.
You have a special needle, or are they sewing needles?
You can use any needle. It depends how many strands of thread you're using on how thick you want your needle. But you can.
Oh, right. Because if you're using different weights, I suppose, or different.
Yeah, they're different sizes. They make different, you know, they can hold a certain amount. So, like, in a piece of embroidery thread, one piece of thread is 6 small strands of thread. So depending on what you're doing and how detailed it is, sometimes you just want to use one strand. Sometimes you want like a real chunky look, you know, and you want to use all 6. So depending on the size of the needle, depends on how much.
Okay.
Or how much thread. But that being said, it's like any hobby, I think, just start. You know, don't get into needle size until you get real nerdy about it.
Right, because you bought a kit. The kit will have the needles, the threads, and the pattern. And then all of a sudden, you will have spent, I don't know, for a kit, is it 3 hours? Is it 30 hours to make a flower?
Oh, like 30. Oh, one flower? I think I'm quite slow. I've only ever embroidered in front of people when I took the one class. So, like, it's not like I'm timing myself. But, like, one flower might take me an hour.
Like, okay, and is it the size of the hoop? Like, and the first hoop you get, it's a small hoop, right? It's just like a pan-sized pizza, right? Like, it's a small.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, usually if you go online and buy one, you'll be dealing with a 5 or a 6-inch hoop. the first thing I ever made that I use like an embroidery pattern for, but like I used a, I had a stencil, is I made ghost face for my brother, and I used a 10 inch hoop, and my God, it took me for freaking ever. Like I said before, I did bring visual aids. So
please go to my YouTube where you have just watched Altercation, and you can watch what did you bring a picture or a
yeah, I have some pictures. So can you see that? No, you can't see that. Hold on, let me see how to do this. What would be the best way? The chat. No, hey, can I share my screen?
Is okay. is Ghostface, are you talking about like the Halloween costume?
I am, yeah, I'm talking about the guy from Scream, yeah.
Okay. So, okay. Oh right. Yeah, you're sharing. It's happening.
There
it is. Are these some of the ones you've done?
Yeah, so these are where are we right now? Can we open that for you? No.
I can see a page of pictures. And there's a there's something that's you've stenciled onto a hoop.
Yeah, so this is what we started with in Ghostface. Sorry, I'm trying to make this like bigger for you. I think this is fine. This is fine. Yeah. You can see what I'm talking about. Okay, so this is like my stencil, and then you go to the outline.
Oh, is that done in pen?
No, that is thread right there.
That's thread. That's you sewing. That's pen.
So that is, yeah. So that right there is a pencil. And what I did was I just literally, I had to like hold it up to a window and trace it that way because fabric is really hard to see through. And that is thread right there that outlines him. And
wow.
Then we start to fill in. And that was my final version of him.
Well,
of Ghostface.
Played with a knife. And stab, stab, stab. And all black. Now,
all
is,
black.
Is the white just the fabric showing through?
The white is the fabric showing through on this one, yes.
Okay.
And like I said, this is the first time I did it without a pattern. So
nice
obviously
job.
I had I patterned that I traced, but I had no instructions. And I find whenever I do something where I have no instructions, I get butterflies in my stomach like you do before you do a really exciting show. Because I'm like, oh, what's going to happen?
You don't know.
Like, how's it going to work? What stitch should I do?
What stitch did you do?
This is, so the knife is done with what is called the satin stitch. And then Ghostface himself, all the black is done with the long short stitch.
Okay. Long short.
Yeah, which is.
Is that covered some real space, the long short? Is that
yeah,
if you kind of want to do something that'll fill in?
The long short stitch is a great fill in, and it also gives a little texture. The satin stitch, everything's in the same line, side by side, and it'll give you more of a satin look, like it's one big block. Another example, this would be a better one for the satin stitch. So this, and I pulled the nerdy stuff because so you know the sassy nerdling. Do you know about Warhammer?
I do know about Warhammer. I don't know about the sassy nerdling.
So this is the only one that hangs in my house. My boyfriend was like, you've done embroidery for everyone else. Do one for me. So this was this was my inspiration. He's called the Sassy Nurgling.
Okay.
And that's what I made for him.
Wow. It looks filthy. So it's his belly button looks like a penis.
Yes.
In both the drawing and in your embroidery.
Yes.
But the helmet is glorious. What stitch did you use for that?
For that one, I used the, I think I used the back, what's it called? The back split stitch. So if we, how do I?
How many?
I don't think I can zoom in on this.
No, and how many stitches are there?
I mean, there's, I mean, this book that I have has 200 in them, and it's not the full database. If you go to royalschoolneedlework.org, they have a stitch bank because they are, the Royal School of Needlework is basically a society foundation that is trying to preserve the art of hand embroidery. So every time they discover a new stitch, they add it into the bank. But if you look at like the pink of his body, that is a long short stitch going all through, and you can see how it makes him a little bit more rough and
right, a little more texture. Tumble. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
He's got some interesting, and then this is clearly a Warhammer image. Does your boyfriend play Warhammer?
Yeah. So, well, he doesn't play it. What he does is he paints the models, and he says he's going to get friends together to play, and he never does. But one of our lovely nights in is times when he's painting Warhammer and I'm doing embroidery, and we're like, we have something on in the background, like YouTube or music, you know, just two aging millennials pretending they're living in the 1960s with their craft work and their radio program.
Right. Right. Does he paint Warhammer figs for friends who play, or does he just keep them?
He keeps them. That's his hobby that he's not monetizing. See, we all need a hobby that we don't turn into a side hustle, which I find very difficult.
Right, right. Because you're just like, how can I now somehow sell this? It's,
And two, with embroidery, another thing I was trying to find was something that I could do with my hands that kept me off of a screen.
Sure.
Because, you know, with stand-up comedy, we're always like putting up our little reels and our little things about our shows. And I'm constantly like on social media, and I don't like that about myself.
Right, right. So you're more present. This is more tactile. That's exciting.
Oh, dude. I had a real breakthrough. This is so nerdy, but I had a real breakthrough the other day. I was doing the leaf stitch on just a regular old pattern. And I was very brave because when you first learn to embroider, they're always like, you can't have your stitches too far apart. You can't have your stitches too far apart. And one time I was working on my leaves and I was like, what if I put my stitch a little further from the original stitch? Like, we're talking less than a millimeter. And then my leaf stitch, oh my gosh, it cleaned up so much. I got a picture of it right here. Like, if you compare the three that are underlined, that's how I used to do the leaf stitch.
Okay.
And you can see the inside of it is really jaggedy, right?
Okay.
And if you look at the top leaves, this is great podcasting. Just totally visual, guys. Enjoy this.
It's a video show too. It's an opportunity. Yes.
It just lays straighter and neater and finer. And that's when I realized that embroidery is the silent pursuit of detail.
Ah, it certainly is. I'm not going to lie to you. That actually sounds like an excellent definition of needlepoint. The silent pursuit of detail. The top leaves look smoother.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, it's such a small difference, but it's one of those, it's kind of like, I mean, when you write a joke and as you've just done with your special, and then all of a sudden you find one line in a 5-minute bit, and you're like, that changes the whole thing for me.
Right. Right.
That's how it feels for me.
That's it worked. Look how smooth that looks, as opposed to the bottom ones, which do look more jagged. And I can.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, good job. This is great. Thank you. Like this. What's the rest of the drawing on it? Is that
the rest of the drawing? Hold on. I'll show it to you. I have it right here. How do I get? Stop screen sharing.
There
hold
you
on.
Go.
I'll be right back.
We're back. Oh, she's going to go find something.
Stuck in my necklace.
I'm talking with Abigailia, Shaman, and she, and that is spelled Abigailiah, and Shaman is Shaman, and she is on Instagram. She has a couple of podcasts. She has a new special called Legally Cheeky, That is on her YouTube channel. And if you go to abacalaya.com, all of this and more will be revealed. Oh my gosh. And now I'm being shown a hoop with very nice, you've done flowers and a roundy laurel thing. And it says take no shit in the middle. Is that what you're working on now?
Yeah. So the take no shit I haven't filled in yet, but the rest of it is done. And that is, this is one of those that my mom sent me. And
she sent you the pattern?
Yeah. She sent me a bunch of patterns that are like, you know, I mean, it's the millennial version of live, laugh, love. Like, instead of that, mouthy. It's like, take no shit.
Right.
Be a badass.
Get off my areola. That's such a Janelle Monáe. Okay. So, that's awesome. That looks at, and those, so what kind of, she'll grab that again, the hoop? Yeah, is that just one kind of stitch, or is that a different bunch of different kinds of stitches?
No, it'll be, there we go. So it'll be several kind of stitches. So these roses are done with what's called the rose stitch or a wheel stitch.
Very specific. And
Yeah,
because it gives that rose texture to it.
Yeah. I'm trying to get it to track this. So there we go. And then the leaves are, it's called the leaf stitch. Embroidery is very literal.
Sure.
The blue baubles are what's called the French knot.
Okay.
Which is like a little knot that you make on top of your embroidery. And one thing I really take umbrage with is like if you look in like media. So, for example, in Game of Thrones, we know Ira isn't like the other girls, and she's a feminist because she's bad at embroidery. And and Sansa is good at embroidery, so she's a girly girl. Right. And like
she's given into the patriarchy by being really good at sewing and embroidery.
Exactly. And same with in Bridgerton, Eloise is like, she asks one girl, she's like, what do you possibly like? What do you like about embroidery? And she's like, oh, the leaf stitch. And I'm like, the leaf stitch changed my life. And she's like, and the French knot, if you feel bold. And Eloise is like, oh. And I was like, do you know how hard the fucking French knot is? You get one wrong, you have to cut them all out because they're attached and they're on top. They're on top. So if you make the stitch wrong and it doesn't pull through correctly, you'll be left with like a loop. And listen. People say that embroidery is like, one of my friends was like, what, you're into embroidery? It's such a trad wife thing. And I was like, it's not
you can take back the night, man.
These crafty pursuits, they have been co-opted by the far right, and I won't have it.
That's it. The thing is they can be used to control and they can be used by the patriarchy. But they're also an art form. If you look at them, I have been to many museums, some of them. Here's my thing with museums. You got an hour 15. That's what you got. Hour and a half if it's amazing. And then I'm going to find your gift shop. And then I'm going to find a coffee shop that's near your museum. So that's the plan. But I have seen like the history of sort of sewing and embroidery and textiles tapestries and a lot of this stuff is for sure art, right? I mean, the fact is you could look at it and go, oh, it's leaves. And you're like, yeah, I don't think you understand that it took somebody 60 hours to do it. And it was a way to keep somebody off the pipe and off the pole back in the 12th century. But I think that as an art form, it's as valid as any other art form. Right?
Yeah. But what is really interesting, especially when you get into tapestry work, you'll go to these museums and it'll be like, this is a tapestry of William the Conqueror and blah, blah, blah. And all the things he did from the, you know, whatever.
Oh, right. Year. Like it's a history book of tapestry.
But what they don't ever have recorded is the women who made it.
Right. Exactly. Right. Like the I saw those unicorn tapestries. You know, the one where the unicorns are in a circle.
Yeah.
So they're up at the if you ever go to the in New York and you go to the Met, it's up past Harlem. Oh, PC's not charging. Calm the fuck down, PC. It's an exciting time to be me. And so they don't have the fact that it was, and it wasn't just one person, and it wasn't even just one woman. It was a team, hopefully plotting rebellion, you know? Yeah. And they're just like, so I'm going to kill my husband tonight. Really? Oh, look what beautiful work you do. Anyway.
Exactly. And someone's like, I did it last week. Would you like to borrow my rat poison? See, women coming together, getting stuff done. This is what sewing circles are, the witch's coven. You know, this is when we were making plans and plotting. It's a beautiful thing.
Right. It's and you took, how long was the class? How many sessions?
The class, so I just did a one-off evening or day class.
Just that's like an intro?
Well, they have these like one-off classes where you can just like go, I want to learn thread painting. And it was 2 days and it ran from like 9 to 5 and you stop in the middle for lunch. And because it, so all of the classes for Royal School of Needlework are held in the British palaces, except for the one in Lexington, Kentucky. But
sure.
So I got to go to Hampton Court Palace, and they like, and you get to go kind of the place where that's where their flagship school is. And you get to go through and go to a part of the palace that no one else is allowed to be in, which sounds really exciting. But then you go in and you're like, oh, it's just a room for embroidery.
You know? Right. It's just a building in the 11th hour. And you're like, did you put plumbing in? Good. Then it doesn't really feel like a castle. So
it does now. But we did, I wasn't able to finish my project there, but I took an amazing class from a woman called, a woman called Christina Clark. And where is it? Oh, did I not put this in my thing? No, it must be in here. Hold on. Let me do some searching here.
Sure.
We did this really cool class. That was mixed medium. Aha, I found it.
Oh.
So this is her example. It's a puffin, but the needlework is kind of like the top of top of the feather in the bird's head and some stitches within the feather, but there is paint and colored pencil going through it to kind of, you know, it's a multimedium one. And
right.
What was cool about this is you got the pattern and then you could make it your own. I didn't finish mine during the class, but this was the example.
Okay.
And that's what I made.
You put a comic book pow on it. And did you do that?
Because it's a power
paint?
Puffin.
Oh, it's a power
Say
puffin.
What?
Hilarious. Is the pow? Word bubble, is that done in paint?
Yeah, that's done in paint. That's done in paint and colored pencil.
That's awesome. How about the feet? Feet of the bird.
The feet are, as of now, the feet are in colored pencil, but I do have some thread to finish it. When I went to the class, I was like, I sat next to two older ladies. Because that's who has time to go take classes at the Royal School of Needlework. And I was like, all excited and nervous. And I was like, I've never done this before. Have you ever taken a class here? And they were like, we have the certificate. And I was like, oh, fancy pants, which is cool. Cause it's like, I had two teachers next to me, but I asked them, I was like, are we going to finish our embroidery, by the end of the lessons? And they just looked at me like, absolutely not. There's no fucking way you
finish
it.
Don't even worry about it. Don't worry about it. Just do as much as you can. Take it home. If you still want to work on it, that's where you work on it.
Exactly. So,
and it was 2 days. And it was 2 days of that puffin? Or And that puffin was used as an example of sort of how to set up the hoop and pick different threads and do different stitches? Or
So that puffin was in a, what I really want to learn how to do, and that was my first attempt of it, is something called thread painting. It's also called silk shading, which is when you use one strand of thread and you do that long short stitch. So a long short stitch is stitches side by side, and one is long and one is short. And when you use one thread, what you do is you start to blend them together, putting light with dark and different colored threads. You blend these different colors together, and it can make a hyper realistic image, more so than anything I've ever done. So, for example,
Rethreading needles?
Yes. Yes. Okay. You have to just accept that. I did not make this one. Hold on.
That's your puffin. Oh, squirrel.
That's
something. Ground rodent.
Yeah. I think maybe a field mouse, but this is from my teacher, Christina, but this is called thread painting. And you can see how the white blends in with the light brown, blends in with the dark brown. And like, look at that eye. Like that's, it gives a far more realistic look. I've seen people who can do actual human portraits in it. It's stunning. The patience and the trust you have to make sure you're making the right decision with it kind of freaks me out a bit. But that,
because if it doesn't work, you have to cut out all the thread and start over? Is that it?
Not all of it, but you would have to start ripping some stuff out here and there. The cool thing about embroidery is a lot of times you can just kind of go over it. So unless you're doing like specific line work, which, so that's line work, right? This is something I made for my sister.
Made a word. So you, words. Okay.
Yeah. So this is a little, what turned out to be a Christmas ornament I made for my sister that is elf themed, that says, "Don't be a cotton headed ninny muggins." And the,
does it lend itself to a certain absurdity from the 1920s?
Exactly. So line work would be the type of stitching that I used for the letters. And when you only are making one line, there's nowhere to hide. But if you're filling stuff in, like, for example, this is the one I'm most proud of. So this is Tom Bombadil. This is the reference photo I used.
Oh,
and that's what I made.
Nice. That looks awesome.
This was another gift for my brother. And I'll be honest, I almost didn't send it to him because I was like, I'll never make anything better than this. This is my greatest achievement.
How long did that take you?
Oh my God, forever.
Months?
But not, well, because like I said, I can sit and do it for like 12 hours at a time.
Okay.
It took weeks. Took weeks, but I've never actually sat down and like timed myself with how many hours this would have taken. I mean, I'm going to go ahead and say over 100 hours.
Okay.
But I don't
and
know.
I've never pictured Tom Bombadil with that big of a beard anyway, but I do love, show me the image that you worked from again.
So this was my reference photo.
Okay. Right.
Which is a painting.
Yeah,
because my brother said he liked Tom Bombadil, and then
he's not wrong.
This is the guy I made, and like within his coat, Tom Bombadil has a beautiful blue coat. There are so many fucking mistakes in here, but you don't know because I've just covered them with more thread.
There you go. Fair enough. And then, and what is the quote? Is one of the songs.
It's something that Tom Bombadil would say. And my brother was like, I really like this quote from him. Maybe you can do a Tom Bombadil. He didn't know I was actually going to do the person. This was also my first attempt of doing a human.
Okay.
It was like,
oh my gosh,
this was a big, big day for me.
You nailed
it. The quote is, "I've got things to do, my makings and my singings, my talking and my walking, and my watching of the country."
That's right. He does. Tom Bombadil's busy. And he's carrying some water lilies for his Goldilocks. That's what he's carrying.
Yeah.
Very beautiful. Well done. I think it's gorgeous.
Yeah. It's, I don't know. It's just, I don't think until I started embroidery, I ever had a hobby. Like, I kept getting really into things and then somehow making them a job. Like, again, like, I loved yoga and I became a yoga instructor. I went
to
school for theater.
Do you still do yoga?
Yeah, I still do yoga, but not like I used to. One of my friends was really surprised by that. She was like, I think it'd be an everyday practice. And I was like, I got too obsessed with the perfection of it all and I had to give it a break. I do still do yoga, but like I was a Bikram teacher, which is a hot yoga and it's very intense.
Yeah.
I don't do that anymore, but you know, I'll get down on the mat and do some downward dogs now and then.
Okay.
I also like to run, which I'm also very bad at. That's another thing. Let's all normalize doing hobbies badly. Like,
that's it. There's no reason. You don't have to be great at it. Are you kidding me? Yeah, it's fine.
The world of social media has made us all feel like we have to do something and something to like a professional level.
Yeah.
And you don't.
You
the
don't.
The only thing you have to do that to is your job. Other than that, you can be shit at everything in your life and
as
really enjoy being shit
enjoy
at it.
Enjoy it. Just, yeah.
And then,
I wouldn't mind trying ice sculpture, but I would just need a block of ice and obviously some sort of chisel.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I have a lot of friends. Maria Bamford and my friend Jennifer McLean take a lot of classes. Like they're constantly
yeah.
off to some painting class or some sewing class or Maria took clown classes for many years. She also takes, she likes to take beginning stand-up comedy classes.
Really?
Yeah. She likes to go to a beginning stand-up comedy class and see what the teacher has to say about stand-up.
Okay, so if I did take a stand-up class when I first started from Corey Kahaney.
Oh, nice.
And if Maria Bamford walked into my beginner stand-up class as a student, I think I'd freak out. Do people freak out when she's
there? I
think
the people who know her are excited. And they're like, what are you doing here? And she's like, well, we're peers, right? We're all trying to learn how to do stand-up comedy.
That's beautiful.
Yeah. So what I would tell people is that you don't have to monetize your hobby, but you can demonetize your job. Like if you enjoy your job enough to just do it for fun, then you win on all accounts, right? So Andy's actually kind of the personification of this because he both makes games for money. Teaches game design and plays games like a madman, like board games and tabletop games and playtests other people's games. And there's little or no money in board games. You have to like hit the lottery if you're gonna all of a sudden you've created Settlers of Catan, right? So, but it's unlikely, so unlikely.
Mm-hmm.
And but there are plenty of board games that you can make sort of a basic living, sort of like stand-up comedy, you know? And, but if you love it, for sure, but I do hear what you're saying about yoga and about other things where you end up, you know, wanting this perfectionism and losing the joy of it. So,
yeah.
Yeah, try not to get whatever weird thing you... My father has always painted. And during lockdown,
that's great.
He started painting commissions for people for, I was like, my dad will paint whatever you want for $100. I cannot speak to the quality. You will mm-hmm. definitely get a picture of a monster. Like somebody wanted a Godzilla. My dad doesn't know what Godzilla looks like. So he just painted a kaiju, right? It was a giant scaly monster, but it was not Godzilla, and the person loved it dearly. He did a couple of unicorns. One was great, one was not, and the person was like, I actually don't like this unicorn. And I was like, you don't have to. There's nothing to be done. You get what you get. It's $100. It's not that big of a deal. And but I feel sort of bad because he used to just paint for fun, And now he's like, well, do you think this would sell? And I'm like, wait, how about you just do it for fun?
Yeah.
And then if I put it up on my Instagram and people want it, people want it. And because I don't want, and so I to some extent I've created a bit of a monster. And
I mean, it's very validating, I think, if you've painted for years like your father and then all of a sudden people are buying it. But like I've purposely not done that because I've shown my embroidery to my friends and they're like, you should start an Etsy shop. And I was like, I will not. I need one thing. Occasionally,
right.
I'll post a photo of what I've done on my Instagram,
right,
because I'm proud of it. But like, I like, no, no, I'm not going to become a YouTube teaching people how to do it. I'm not going to do commissions. It's like, and it's what I've
because none of that. Because none of that sounds fun. That sounds like you will obsess about that, and then it will become something that you feel you have to do. And right now, it is just something that you're like, I get so lost in this. I do it for 10 hours, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And when I want to lose 10 hours, and I've gifted a lot of it, but the idea of selling it, first of all, as we've discussed, it takes me so damn long that I'm like, there is not a I'm pretty proud of what I've done. But when you look at like people who do commissions, I'm not really that good. And it takes me so long that I'm like, That hoop I showed you I'm working on now, that's just a pattern. I didn't even come up with that. I'm like 1,000 pounds. Like,
right,
that's how much, that's
right,
how long it took me to make. Just the time alone. It's not worth 1,000 pounds.
So you might as well give it away. You're just like,
yeah,
are you going to give me $1 million or I'm just going to hand it to you because you liked it? How about that?
Yeah.
And that holds its own value, I think, you know?
Yeah.
So... it's, hang on, I'm actually going to grab, I brought these paintings of my father's with me.
Oh, yes, I'd love to see them.
Heck. I didn't know what to do. And, but I think you've inspired me that I don't want to sell them anymore. You know, I just, I'm just going to say.
They're your dad's paintings, so are you, you're like his gallerist.
I'm his curator. He sold like 20 of them. He's made like
two. That's amazing.
Yeah. But they're all like this. They're 8x10.
Oh, that's cute.
Right.
Yeah.
Here's a sheep and a pump. He's an aluminum siding salesman, so all of his structures are great. Like, he makes really good houses. My mother-in-law asked him to paint a paddle wheel. So,
wow, that's beautiful.
Right.
Elliot Cation. Look at that.
But then he's just a weirdo sometimes. And he's like, I want to do that. I want to do that.
Oh, that is fun.
Right. And I'm like, okay, it's got some edge tension, but why? Why have you done it? And then this feels aggressive.
Well, in the time we're living in now, it's like, what? Who'd you vote for, Elliot? What's that mean?
And then, you know, here's a nice
That's
swan.
That's really pretty.
Sure. And then here is it's a goldfish jumping out of a goldfish thing into the river. And
yes,
it's a little escapism, right? And so I don't know. I brought them, but I don't think that I can. I mean, the things that I sell are usually just made of bees, t-shirts, and hats. And then I'm going to make, for my new album, essentially it's just going to be a download card, but attached to it will be an enamel pin of a bee, because I'm,
fun,
the joke is made of bees. And so it'll be an enamel pin of the bee, and then all the proceeds will go to fight fascism and for legal aid. And
that's amazing.
Yeah, and then if people listen to the album, that is a win. And then... if they just buy the pin and I make 20 grand to give to somebody to help somebody, we all win. So good for us.
So can I ask, the when you sell your dad's paintings, are you getting a percentage?
I am not. So it's $100 plus shipping. So I'm like, I'm going to need an extra 10 or 20 bucks depending on where you live. If he has to mail it to me and then I have to mail it to you, because I'm not going to trust him to mail it to you. And he doesn't have Venmo. So,
You know what? If your dad still wants to sell his paintings, first of all, I respect that. They're beautiful paintings.
Yes.
But I think you should be released from your job as the curator and like gallerist. And and I say this with love and respect for your father, but are they buying it because it's a beautiful painting, or are they buying it because they think it's funny to buy a painting from your dad specifically because they are fans of your stand-up comedy?
I think both. I think in some cases, because some of them are super cute. He did like a series of cows that were very whimsical and very fun. And I even printed up a couple of t-shirts of them because and then he also did a series of pigs and a series of chickens. I was like,
oh, that's fun.
Yeah. Why don't you grab an animal, Dad, and then do a series, a bear in a hat, a bear in some sunglasses, do whatever you want. But when you do like a serious, like a fun little scene, like my favorite ones, and I accidentally sold my favorite. It was just a bunch of chickens in front of a house. And I was like, why? I missed that painting. But I have kept the ones that I mostly love. Like, Chris really liked the cow with sunglasses. Mm-hmm. And we also have like a portrait of a woman he did. And then these three corns. And then a statue in Artsakh in Azerbaijan. And so yes, but I think you're right. I sort of need to give it up and let him just do it for funsies. Yeah.
Paint. Do you have a hobby that you do just for funsies that you don't
video
games? You haven't started live stream? What is it, video games?
Yeah, pretty much. I play a couple of video games on my phone. And we have a lot of the, like, I have a Switch and I have an Oculus and we have a PS4 or 5, and I can't turn them on because I won't get anything done. And mm-hmm. But I will say the Oculus, I have a Batman video game that came with the Oculus that I'm still trapped in the tutorial because I can't throw the battery. It's very, very obnoxious and very sad. But
my boyfriend has gotten me a Nintendo Switch. That's a little one.
Yep.
Right?
Handheld.
Yeah. So I could take on, when I'm away for the weekends. And we do have an Oculus, which I did play for a while. I liked the Beat Saber. But I never take the Nintendo Switch away. Like, when I'm with him, sometimes I'll play it. But video games for me are something that it's like I'll play for like an hour and be like, okay, I'm done. Like, they don't hold my attention. For his birthday, we went to Bristol for a weekend with him and his mates. And we went to these, like, those bars that now have old vintage games.
Yes.
And I tried to play some of the video games, the arcade games, but it just didn't. Like, I was like, oh, I'll do a driving one because you get to do a drive, but you can't feel anything. There's no resistance. I was like, I don't know. I don't like this. But then I found a pinball machine, and I can get down with some pinball. I know you just took off your headphones. Did you hear any of that?
I did. You could get down with some pinball. Here's the thing. You are, it might be
an age
thing.
Because the world changes around you.
Right, right. It's, but the, like, I grew up on uprights, it's, mm-hmm. And so upright video games were an obsession of mine through college and most of until I could afford a Game Boy, and then the Game Boy kind of took over. And I read I mostly read sort of genre books, like if it's romance novels or mystery novels, or I've read all the Jack Reachers.
Oh, nice.
Science fiction. I'm reading a Neal Stephenson book right now, Diamond Age. It was written in the 90s. Ooh. He was the guy that wrote Snow Crash that everybody was real excited about. I liked a different book that he wrote at the same time called Zodiac. It was about environmentalism. This one was given to me by my friend Kevin. And Kevin is like, it's about nanotechnology, written in the 90s. And it's set in the 21st century. And I was like, okay. But I do like the idea of doing something with your hands. I don't like the idea of threading a lot of needles, though. Because I just feel like it's going to shoot my eyesight to hell.
I mean, I do wear magnifying glasses on my face when I do it.
Okay.
Yeah, like I have basically glasses that are magnifying glasses. You get used the threading of the needle is the worst part, but you do get used to it.
Okay. And is it fun to shop for needles? The threads?
Threads, yeah. What I did when I started to do my own stuff, though, was because I get a little overwhelmed, like, what do I need? Now I'm starting to, like, buy skeins of thread as I need them. But kind of when I was like, I'm going to do my own thing, I just went online and bought, like, this box of, like, 200 threads for not that much money. So they're probably not, like, the high-end threads, but I figure use those. And then as I replace them, I can replace them with, I think DCM is the company that makes, like, the grade standard of embroidery thread.
Oh, that's cool.
But going back to reading real quick, I used to read voraciously and then, of course, got away with it, got off of it because social media broke my brain. Last summer, I deleted my apps, took time off social media, which, by the way, all of my successes in stand-up comedy, no one gave a shit. In every green room I went into, people were like, so you've deleted the apps. What's your life like now? Like, no one could believe it. I went from not having read a book for years to like I read 18 in a year, and it is so lovely. Again, physical thing, page, like, you know, you're not really doing anything with your hands per se.
Right.
I mean, you're turning the pages, but just something that's not,
it's more tactile.
Looking,
yeah.
Yes.
Though I will
it's
say,
so good.
I'm listening to a Judi Dench. It's called The Man Who Pays the Bills. And it's essentially a very long interview with her about all the different Shakespeare plays she was in. And I'm listening to that on an audiobook of that. And then
nice.
I'm rereading some books on Kindle. I do reread on the screen, on the phone. But then if I read a new book, it has to be in paper. Just because comprehension skills are better with a physical book.
Me too. What I'll often do is I'll read a physical book. Like, so I've read the ACOTAR books. And then I'll go back and I'll listen to them on audio because a podcast is about an hour, right? So if I miss a part, very easy to go back. But if I space out in an audio book, too much. I've missed too much. But I re-listened to it. The ACOTAR books, A Court of Thorns and Roses, the Sarah J. Maas. Do you know who she is?
No, sort of a modern fantasy?
Yeah, she's a big deal. It's about fantasy.
I've heard her name.
See, yeah, she's one of those people. I'm sure the Rangers listening will know her, that some people think she's an awful writer. Some people think she's a magnificent writer. And
that sounds like everyone who's ever written a book. Yes.
Yeah. But, you know, it's all about the fairy realm and there's fights. And there, some people say that they're really sexy. And there's some sexy moments. But the first book, almost no sex in it. And my sister was like, it doesn't really get going until book two or three. But I remember, like, in one of them, they're thick reads. One of them was like, the first sex scene was on like page 400. And I was like, this isn't a sexy book. If I have to basically read what is a book to get to the sexy part of this book, that is not a sexy book.
Right. But Jack Reacher always got laid right around page 450.
Oh, I got to check out this Jack Reacher.
The TV show is actually quite good with the gorilla dude, who just a giant dude who plays Jack Reacher. He does an excellent job.
Is it?
Which, you know, I'm not a huge fan. I think that we are in the troubles that we're in because of anti-heroes and vigilantism that has been glorified. But I do like a Jack Reacher. I did always, because he's always on the right side of, you know, he's usually murdering, like, child porn people. So, he's usually murdering bad guys. But you're like, okay, I can only read a certain number of Jack, the revenge porn of Jack Reacher novels, and and James Bond and all that stuff. And then same, but the same with space opera, like Lois McMaster Fujold. I'll read all of those books, and those don't have any sexy times, but they have a lot of romance, and they're more like Star Wars in the fact that
ooh, fun.
Yeah, yeah, they're action, romantic action movies, books.
Have you read any T.J. Klune?
How do you spell Klune? C or K?
K-L-U-N-E. No. T.J. Klune. He's, my sister gave me two of his books for Christmas that are, they go together. I guess a series, but there's two of them. So is that a series?
Yeah.
But one is called The House on the Cerulean Sea, and one is called Somewhere by the Sea. These are fantasy, but they are not sexy at all. It's about kind of like an orphanage with, like, you know, one kid's a gnome, one kid's like, I can't remember what he's called, but he's kind of like a mini
News
dragon.
Bears, and they're just sort of a school of or an orphanage full of different kinds of magical kids.
Yeah. And, but these magical kids are ostracized by the non-magical people. It's essentially the whole thing is an allegory for, trans people and trans rights.
Right,
and
right. It's outsiderism. It's the X-Men. It's yeah. You know, the way it's always
That's exactly
been done.
What yeah. it is. Oh my God. It's so gorgeous. It's one of the reviews on the front of the book is like, it's like reading a gay hug. And I'm like, it is. I want to be in that world. I want to live with these people. These are amazing people.
That's very sweet. You should know this, Avogalia. We have been talking for an hour and it has been great.
It's
have learned
lovely.
Some things about embroidery. I have enjoyed talking to you a great deal. My fellow people of the world, find Avogalia online. It's at Avogalia. But if you go to avogalia.com, it's got the YouTube, it's got the Instagram, it's got all the different things. The two podcasts that she's hosting and co-hosting. Legally Cheeky Special is on YouTube, which is linkable off of avogalia.com. And thank you. I'm just going to tell you, thanks for doing the show. It's been great.
Well, thanks for having me. Now that we're at the end, I will do my little gush. And it's like, you're one of the, when I got into comedy, you were one of the, like, this is my girl.
Oh, there you
like,
go.
Like, I've watched and loved your work for years and years and years.
Appreciate
and years.
That.
And now we're colleagues.
Now we're colleagues. It's exactly. We're peers. Anyway, it is great. And, Rangers, you know the rules out there. Take care of each other.
My hat, my hat, my hat. They're dancing around my hat. My hat, my hat, my hat. Well, what do you think of that? If it looks like a Mexican hat dance and it sounds like a Mexican hat dance, it's most likely a Mexican hat dance. So take off your hat and let's dance.
Yay! Oh, my God. Why don't we just call that as the end of the show?